Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Name a Catalan football club with a clear plan and an entertaining team. Yes, congratulations to history-making Girona for their first ever win away to Barcelona. Back on top, 7 points ahead of their defeated opponents. So will Girona win the league? Well, not according to 85% of you. In fact, more people think they'll finish fifth or lower than think they'll be champions. It's Christmas in miserable blighters, at least pretend. Barca's director of football, Deco, said they were poor. Frankie de Jong agreed. Xavi said everything was fine, it just wasn't their day. He can draw on the stats to back up his case. Barca created 172 big chances with an XG of 157,000. Real Madrid are off the top after drawing at Betis with Isco inches away from a winner. Bellingham scored. Obviously, no Real Madrid player touched the ball directly in front of the Betis goal. It's the first time in history that the club has retired the centre-forward position, in their case, out of respect for Karim Benzema. Now, who would have thought that Getafe against Valencia would finish with only 19 players on the pitch? What wasn't so predictable was that it would be the referee who was body-checking the players off the ball. There's a final round of European group games upcoming with Real Sociedad out to finish above Inter in their group. And Sevilla looking to snatch a Europa League place. The narrative is there. Get in by the skin of their teeth and win their favourite trophy again. The main thing working against them is that they're absolutely awful. And, of course, that their goals are now randomly disallowed. Now, we all love football, but at times I do think we overdo it. The Granada versus Athletic match was suspended yesterday because of the death of a supporter, Antonio Trujillo. Tragic, although his wife has told journalists that he would have signed up for it if he'd been offered the chance of Los Carmenes being the place at which he would die. The 64-year-old had been having chemotherapy and he had a heart attack. Rest in peace, Antonio, and love and respect to his family as well. If you've got to go, why not go watching your beloved... your beloved football team. Right, let's get down to the business of the day. And Terry, before we get into the sort of the details of what Barca are doing wrong, which is where we tend to end up quite frequently, I do want to say what a good game it was. So I mean, Girona are terrific entity. It was a brilliant game. The XG was particularly Barca's was ludicrously high. Girona had loads of chances as well. Terrific entertainment.
It was, and for Girona, I mean, it was an incredible display. The game had a good, great flow to it. It was far too open. For the neutral, it was great to watch. If you support either of those, well, if you support Barcelona, you'd be frustrated that pretty much every time Girona got the ball and broke, it looked like it was going to be an end product. That was the frustrating thing for Barcelona fans. And Xavi did say we controlled the game. They didn't. There was no control over that game. It played into the hands of Girona, who had a plan. And that plan was to play the three at the back, to play the wing backs, to hopefully exploit the fact that Barcelona's wingers don't defend, to exploit the fact that Barcelona's fullbacks don't defend. And using the wing backs in the way they did worked perfectly well. But it was the reason it was so good. It was so open and there were so many attempts on goal and there was a lack of defensive know-how from Barcelona, which I thought would change when they got back to 1-1. I thought then that the panic's over. If you're Barcelona now, you're at home, you're playing against a team you still should be, you still have better players, now play a normal game. And they didn't. They continued to leave massive gaps all over the place. Closing down from the front players wasn't particularly good. They only had interest in closing down when it was an individual player closing down, when he thought he had a chance of winning the ball back himself and then, you know, trying to get an attempt in on goal. Other than that, there was no cohesion in the closing down. In up front, in midfield, at the back, it was shambolic from Barcelona, to be honest. But the reason it was such a good game is because it was so open. And I was you know, a bit bewildered by Xavi saying we had control. We controlled it. They had no control over that game. Hence the reason they lost. It was a great game because at 3-2, Lewandowski, when they get back, Gundogan scores. There's still time for an equaliser and they should have got it. So it should have been 3-3. Lewandowski missed an absolute sitter with a header. And then the next few seconds, Duane gets the fourth goal. So it puts a different slant on it. But there's no doubt in my mind, and I think most people, that Girona deserved the goal, deserved the win. You know, to score four goals away from home against Barcelona in the manner they did, they had other chances as well. It was a thrilling game of football. But we do have to look at the point you made, one team with a plan and one team without a plan. And then it just got worse as the night went on with the decisions that Xavi was making. Compared to Michel, his decisions to make changes worked perfectly. Mm. Valerie and Stuani coming on and scoring goals. Whereas Barcelona just, it got worse when Xavi started making changes.
So when he made the changes, it was Albert Ferrer, wasn't it, who was in the co-coms, and he said confidently, oh, so Cancelo will go to right back. And Balde will come on at left back. And you're right. So, well, he was...
Centre-back.
Yeah, you thought that's what would happen. Balde ended up playing centre-back.
So we had right-back playing left-back and a left-back, centre-back playing right-back and a left-back playing centre-back.
And when the reporter asked Xavi about it, credit to Xavi, he faced up, did his interview in English and after the game. I didn't understand what he... I understand the words. All the words were there in perfect English, but I've no idea.
He said make them more attacking. It was because Ferran Torres came in on the left as well. So you had Ferran Torres, Cancelo and Balde all looking confused as to... Well, Ferran Torres knew he was playing the front three. Cancelo was kept looking around and thinking, well, where am I, left midfield? And then Balde was in front of Cancelo and Cancelo didn't get back. And then Balde was centre-back, and then Balde was midfield, and you see a young player looking around at the bench, inquiring as to, where am I playing? Araujo were looking around him and thinking, have I got anyone next to me? Because they're playing attacking football and we're being left all over the place. I didn't get it. He had the square pegs to go in the square holes, and he decided to go with square pegs and round holes, and it just didn't. It looked a mess. It really did look a mess, and it lent itself to the fact that they made it even more of a good game because there was no, as I said, there was no cohesion with Barcelona at all last night. Yeah. We can pick through the players. Iñaki Peña, he did okay. No obvious mistakes. Koundé still looks well off the pace, in my opinion.
Can I stop you about Koundé? So Jackie, one of our Patreons, patreon.com/Hiltel. He's got a point about Kapua, we'll get to later. Right, I know you guys have touched on Koundé, but I thought he was a liability last night and in most games now. Not sure what the issue is, but I think he's carrying a bit too much bulk. He looks slow, unaware, and as Terry has pointed out, often seems knackered. I think Inigo Martinez is streaks ahead of him.
As a centre-back, I completely agree with Jackie there. And whether it's right-back or centre-back, Koundé's not at it. And I'm surprised he doesn't look quick anymore. He doesn't see danger anymore. When he was at Sevilla, his lack of height was never a problem. But it appears it is now. At Sevilla, when you thought he can't play centre-back, he's not tall enough. The presence he had in terms of aerial ability was second to none. It was like Ramos. He's probably maybe a touch shorter than Ramos. But, that ability to make up in terms of lack of height, with not just scoring goals, but his defensive duties as well. He looked quick. He was good on the ball. He looked enthusiastic. He doesn't look any of that at the moment. So I think there's an obvious... For me, it'd be Cancelo at right back, and I've got my issues with Cancelo. I'm beginning to see now why Pep's let him move on. He has no interest in defending whatsoever. I mean, for the first goal last night when they played the ball down the channel, he's got his back to the player that's passing the ball downfield and makes no attempt to get back. And it's becoming a trend in football now where the fullbacks, we've joked about a fullback having a free role. Mm-hmm. It is a free role in terms of attacking sometimes. If you can push on, you time your runs, you pick your runs, you pick your movements forward, you might be able to get in unopposed. But now we're seeing fullbacks play in midfield, in central midfield. We're seeing them play in a midfield position where they don't think they have to get back. It was a straightforward channel ball past Christensen. No pressure applied from Felix on the player in possession. It was an easy ball down the channel and they're away and through on goal. It was terrible. And you saw the replay of Cancelo's attitude to defending. No attempt whatsoever to get back. And that carried on throughout the game. He comes alive when the ball's near him and he wants the ball and he wants to go forward. But fullbacks have to be in position sometimes. They have to have some interest in defending. They can't just have that cheat role where they play, I'm a fullback, I'm a defender, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to ghost around the pitch and try and find some space and look good in possession. So he brings the attributes that Barcelona have been missing in terms of replacing the right back that they've tried to do replace Dani Alves for so long. And he's the closest they've got to it, but he has to do some defending. Dani Alves did. Even when he came back in his mid-30s, he did more defending than Cancelo. Now, whether it's on the right or the left, Cancelo, he's reasonably two-footed. He can play on the left. But for the balance of the team, Cancelo right-back, Balde left-back, that's the start. And I agree with Jackie. For me, it'd be Araujo and Inigo Martinez. Christensen doesn't let them down either. So he might be pushing Inigo Martinez for the start. Yeah. But I think, I agree, Koundé is miles away from it. There's no obvious holding midfielder. So when you play Barcelona now, there's no Busquets. Plug in the gaps. De Jong plays in that kind of role, but he's left too isolated with the fact there's no fullbacks about. And he's not sure whether to drop in between the two centre-halves or go into a fullback position when his team lose the ball. It's Gundogan really pushed on. I thought Gundogan was poor last night, but his attitude was brilliant. And I think that's been the case for a lot of the season. That I think his attitude is really good. He wants to succeed. He wants to be a champion again. But I don't think he's playing at the top of his game. I thought Pedri's best game last night. So another reason I was surprised when he was taken off when they were training.
Yeah.
You know, I know they've got to be careful, but I still thought he had some playing time left in him. He looked comfortable last night. And I thought he was their biggest threat in terms of being creative. Gundogan kept getting himself in the box and having shots at goal. João Félix is just, we can't just use the Atletico Madrid game as the yardstick, as they've got to keep him. They've got to sign him. I wouldn't sign him now if I was Barcelona. I wouldn't pay whatever it's going to take to bring João Félix. It's two hit and miss. And again, it's an attitude where he comes alive when he's in possession of the ball. But at the moment, even when I say he comes alive, there's not enough end product on a consistent basis. So we can, you know, I know he's got his fans. I want to see him succeed. I like that type of footballer that has that ability that, you know, can beat opponents. But he's not beating opponents. He's not scoring enough goals. And I just don't see enough from him for Barcelona to decide to stump up an absolute fortune to bring him to the club. He says all the right things. He wants to play for the club. Do it on the pitch. You know, chase back, challenge people. Make sure that you are tidier when you're trying to beat opponents, rather than you might get past the first one, you drop your shoulder and you get tackled on the second. No cross, no shot or goal, no chances created, no chances. You're not on the end of any chances. And then we have to talk. I thought Rafinha actually was all right last night. I think he looked a threat. And then we have to talk about Lewandowski. He's still the top scorer at the club. Still one of the top scorers in La Liga. Great header for the goal. And then he misses an absolute sitter at 3-2.
In 90-odd minutes as well.
Which would have tied it would have tied the game up. I doubt Girona would have got a winner. And Barcelona would have salvaged a point out of it. And it should have been. It was an absolute sitter by anybody's standards. And let alone from Lewandowski. So that's how I see it at the moment. Lamine Yamal, they're relying on him coming on and doing something different. Ferran Torres, you could argue, on one hand, that he deserves a spot. Probably does. And if that position is going to be for João Félix, then so be it. People will say he should be playing instead of Lewandowski. But Lewandowski still gets you goals. So I think if you take Lewandowski out, it takes a chunk of the team out. My preference would be probably Ferran Torres on the left for João Félix.
Yeah, and in a sense, he's their player. So in terms of long-term value, even if you don't, you know, if they're going to sell Ferran Torres at some point, you'll get more from him if he's been playing. Then, you know, if I suppose they're still invested in João Félix, haven't they? Can I just read you Philip's points? It backs up what you said. He says, no structure versus concrete structure. I've no faith left in Xavi. I don't see what he wants the team to do, and I don't know what he attempts to avoid them doing either. The one thing I see is that players are looking confused.
Yeah, and my argument, my point I would like to make about Xavi is he has his brother as his assistant and a close friend from years gone by as an assistant. Neither have been managers. I don't think either have been players. And I just feel that when you make a change like he did last night, it needed someone there to say to him, are you sure? And Xavi might turn around and say, why, what do you mean? And say, and that argument, not argument, but that debate might make a manager like Xavi, who's only... He's still a new manager.
Yeah. You
know, he won the title last season. It's a season and a half, maybe two full seasons, the total of two seasons, half a season, a full season, and now half a season. But sometimes you need that. There isn't anybody there. So when Xavi makes those choices, nobody's going to turn around and go, what? Why don't you just do this and do that? And then Xavi says, no, this is my plan. Fair enough. That's what someone else should be bouncing off of you. Yeah. So that would be, I feel that he does need some more senior experience to challenge him without challenging him, you know, someone who's not after his job, that all those obvious things, but someone who wants to succeed alongside Xavi. And that should I think that's where sometimes I think it's evident that his staff are not as experienced as they should be to challenge him.
Yeah.
To bring up debates, to bring up points. So, and then when he says that they had control, they didn't have control of that game last night. That's what made it a great game, that a home team that had better players, they still had better players than Girona. So when it got back to 1-1, Barcelona started well. Girona scored against the run of play with their first goal. Then Lewandowski equalises. That's when it should have settled down and Barcelona should have had control, but they didn't. The chances kept being created by Girona. You look at the back three of Girona and compare them to any of the players that Barcelona can pick from: Daley Blind, David Lopez, and Eric Garcia. They were good. They were solid. They are solid. They have been solid. The fullbacks, Miguel Gutierrez and Jan Couto, compare them with the wide players, defensive players that Barcelona could play. All around the pitch, Barcelona had better players. Yet Girona look a better team than all the others, to be honest, not just Barcelona. It's astonishing what they are doing.
Yes.
I mean, some of the players are playing out their skin. Some of the players you'd think, where's Daley Blind?
Yeah.
How's he doing that? How's David Lopez doing that at his age? Eric Garcia wasn't good enough for Barcelona, probably is the right answer. But he's looking great for Girona.
Yeah.
You're talking Sienkov and Dobbik that didn't spend fortunes on them. They wouldn't get in Barcelona's team. And there they are, ripping the league up, creating goals, scoring goals. Savio looks to be a real find as well. Alex Garcia is probably one of the best players in La Liga this season. Stuani coming off the bench. The subs were good when they came on. So when you get back to 1-1 and you're at home and you're Barcelona, just rely on the fact that you've got better players than your opponent. And if you have a plan, you should win if the players apply themselves properly. But there was no plan at 1-1. It was all over the place still.
Right. So on Twitter, if anyone still uses Twitter out there, you're only allowed four options. So I went champions, where will Girona finish? And champions currently, it's up to 16.1. Runners-up, 14.8. So more people, think we'll be champions than runners-up. Third or fourth is the most popular, which is 46%. And then fifth or lower is 23%. So what are you going to vote for? In fact, did you vote?
Real Sociedad have got 29 points.
Yeah.
So that's a hell of a gap. I think Real Sociedad can make the top four, but it might not be at the expense of Girona. I mean, first of all, let's say Girona are safe. Relegation.
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
I mean, 16 games, they've had one defeat, two draws, 13 wins. They're top scorers in the tournament, in the competition.
Yeah.
Can they win it? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be a miracle. It'd be miraculous if they continue this form. I think that about Bellingham. He can't keep scoring every game, but he does. These two stories in La Liga this season, I expected to end six rounds of games ago. I didn't expect Bellingham. I thought he might, you know, when he had that start, I thought, yep, he's a midfield player. I don't expect him to score every game. He pretty much is, you know. I didn't expect Girona to be, after the defeat against Real Madrid, to bounce back and continue to win game after game after game. They come from behind. They have belief. They have confidence. They're having the time of their lives. They're riding a massive wave. And I keep expecting it to crash into the shore. And they're still doing it. Last night, I think it was nailed on Barcelona beat Girona last night. It's me being disrespectful, I guess, to Girona in the fact that they haven't played Atletico Madrid yet. Albert Ferrer made the point in commentary. They've drawn against Real Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao. They haven't played Atletico Madrid. They got beat by Real Madrid. Let's see how good they are. They're bloody good. They're really good. And I, you know, sometimes this happens. We had Leicester in the Premier League a few years ago. It took to about five games to the end of the season before suddenly thought, they're going to win it. This would be even more extraordinary than
Leicester. With that Leicester season, people kept playing into their style of play all the way through the season. Eventually, you start thinking, stop letting them counter-attack you. So, Right. Okay. So Giroud.
I didn't answer your question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love it. I love the story. I love the question. I think they get top four.
Yeah.
I think Real Madrid win the league.
Right. Yeah.
I think they might come second. Girona. Right.
Okay. Okay. I don't know what I'd vote, actually. I don't know that you're allowed to vote in your own polls, are you? What would I think, yeah. I think third or fourth, I think, is definitely there. Yeah. But, yeah, literally, on what we've seen so far, they're top of the league, aren't they?
We just believe that it can't continue, don't we? We're just waiting for it all to, not to fall apart, but we're waiting for a sticky period where they get beat. They might lead a game and then someone gets a draw, and then the confidence just drifts away. The pressure builds up, but it looks like they're having the time of their lives. It's you know everybody involved. I'm loving the story. Congratulations to them. I hope the form continues, the results continue. It's hard to imagine it's going to, but I thought that 6 weeks ago. Yet they still are. So absolutely brilliant for Girona.
Betis 1, Real Madrid 1. So Bellingham scored. Rui Bal, it was that way around, wasn't it? Rui Bal then hit that brilliant shot, absolute thumper into the top corner. Isco with a sort of diving header against the post in the 89th minute or something, isn't it? Right at the end of the game. No, I mean, Betis are a good team, isn't it? So it's not a disastrous result. Tell us what you think. I'll get up the touch map. We've done this before. I was looking at Bellingham to see where he. And then I noticed that phenomenon that no one plays centre forward for Real Madrid.
I'm glad you confirmed that because I looked at the touch map and the heat maps and stuff like that in individual positions, but it was glaringly obvious.
Yeah.
Rodrigo played wide left, Brahim Diaz played wide right, and Modric and Bellingham were attacking midfield, but facing the goal, no one was playing with their back to goal in the centre of attack. To be honest, I thought it worked. I thought there was enough opportunities created. I thought they kept possession of the ball well. In Bellingham and Modric, they're two intelligent players that got forward at the right times. It does make it, occasionally it works in the fact that centre-backs don't really know what to do when there's no one there to mark. Yeah. That can cause an element of confusion. I wouldn't suggest it's something you can continue to do long-term. But when you have possession and you have the quality and you have the intelligence of players, you know, Kroos and Valverde are holding midfield, and the other two just bombed on. The fullbacks push on as well. It's not like they lacked possession in that area of the pitch. It was just different players playing there. Have to say, Rodrigo was electric.
Yeah.
To be honest.
So Rodrigo's position is this. So he's wide.
Yeah.
He's basically a left winger.
Yeah.
To see where he touches the ball.
There are quite a few infield touches.
Yeah. So he's inside left and outside left.
Yeah.
Using the old terminology, that actually works. And then if you stick Brahim Diaz, so take him off and stick Brahim on, he's the opposite. He is
predominantly wide.
Yeah, wide right in his case.
Yeah.
Bellingham, all over the joint. It sounds derogatory when you say he's all over the place, but he literally is. Duke Bellingham. And then I start thinking about, so who does? So Modric is the only one. He's got that touch on the penalty spot. Kroos, one touch on the penalty spot. Valverde, central and deep.
Yeah.
So literally no one. And he put them all in. And then he's the one that amused me most was Hosolu. He was only on for 15 minutes. It's like, how many touches? Four touches of the ball.
Well, I would say it was, this game had a good flow to it. There was periods of it, you think one team getting top, then the other team have a period. It was, that's what, in my opinion, makes a really good game where, you know, as opposed to someone dominating and playing well and the other team hardly getting out, this had the periods of the games where you wasn't sure who was going to win.
Mm,
and I don't think this is a bad result for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
You know, considering circumstances, still got lots of players missing, young players on the bench, not a lot to turn to. And I think in the circumstances, I think Betis probably shaded it, to be honest. The reason I say that is they finished stronger, Real Betis. They finished stronger. So Isco, it leaves that impression on your mind. Isco was unlucky with the header. There was other opportunities they didn't make the most of. Other opportunities where Real Madrid defended really well. But it was Betis who finished the game stronger. going all out for the win. Yeah. Real Madrid weren't hanging on. They weren't, clinging on for dear life. But Betis finished stronger. So therefore, it leaves the impression that maybe Betis should have nicked it. But it was a really good game. Two really good teams. It's not a disastrous result for Real Madrid. It's a well-earned point. It hasn't gone down well with them because Girona won again. And I imagine that Real Madrid would have wanted Girona to win last night, because they will feel they're easier to pick up.
Out of disrespect for Girona again, isn't it? It's
and they've got
the truth
to play them at home. Having beat them away, they've got to play them at home. They would rather see the back of Barcelona. So I think they would have been, although disappointed to finish the weekend off in second, they would have been delighted that them dropping 2 points wasn't costly because Barcelona didn't pick up any. So it was a really good game as well. Great atmosphere. Betis supporters doing themselves proud again with the stuffed toys for the children's charities. I love watching Betis at the moment. They're a good watch. And this go again. Didn't start off well, but he finished strongly. Betis finished strongly. And Betis left a really good impression. And that's why I'm saying we can't expect the teams at the top to roll everyone over. And it should be a massive crisis if Real Madrid don't win at Betis.
Betis have got Rangers in the Europa League, top of the group, but still need a result. A draw will get them through, but they could get dumped out of it if they don't win. Real Madrid obviously through in the Champions League, but we'll see what sign team they put out at the weekend as to whether they... midweek, as to how strong they go. Atleti also got Champions League in midweek. They've just got to stay ahead of Lazio, who they play. 2-1 against Almeria, which in the early on, it looked brilliantly taken goal by Morata. Then they cut them open and Correa made it 2. And it looked like it was comfortable for Atleti, anything but by the end, though.
Oh, I think it would be 5 or 6. They're playing a team that haven't won a game this season. Are totally bereft of any confidence whatsoever, are struggling to find the centre forward, and you're thinking there's no way back here. It's just impossible. This is going to... I feared Almeria, but it didn't end up that way. And Atleti were hanging on for dear life at the end. The last 5 minutes they controlled, but for a 10 or 15 minute period before that, I'm astonished that Almeria didn't score. Atleti was so poor. Now, I don't know how that situation came about. And 2-0 Atleti, you're thinking, in general terms, this is perfect for them. I didn't expect them to, although we've seen more from them attacking-wise this year, I didn't expect them to start suddenly be so shoddy defensively, so shoddy in midfield. There was a point at 2-1 when Baptista scores. It was relentless from Almeria, and I think it was a given that they were going to get an equaliser. And I looked around at the Atleti team. Koke had given the ball away. That's what their big problem was, Atleti. They kept giving possession away. So a hint of complacency, and then suddenly the game was back on and they couldn't find that early form again. And I looked at Atleti's team, and it was one of those moments where you needed a Koke in particular as captain. He'd given the ball away, ended up a corner, and there was a period where I looked and I was waiting for someone like him or Savic to really get stuck into his teammates, to show the input, the fist pumping, and really to make them focus, to make them switch on, to show that grit and determination that we always associate with Simeone's teams, and no one did it. And I thought, this is strange. It needed Koke, it needed Savage, Jimenez, I'm not sure if he was on. It needed someone at that point to rally round and say, let's liven up. We were 2-0 up, it's 2-1. Let's pull our finger out. Give a rollicking to your teammates. It didn't happen, and I did see Koke after that telling everyone to calm down. They got across the line, but they needed to roll their sleeves up. They needed to dig in, and they needed to show a little bit more determination. Because if it was anybody but Almeria, that game they could have dropped points from a performance where for an hour they were brilliant, and then for 30 minutes awful. Saw them laughing at the end because I think they knew that they got away with one.
Yeah.
I saw Griezmann laughing with Memphis. Memphis was laughing, and I'm not surprised. Memphis was Almeria's best player when he came on. And I have to say, I'm glad he's back. I think he's a massive help to Atletico. I think he's a really good player, but that when he came on yesterday, he just had one of those games where literally every time he touched it, he messed up. And he gave the ball away. He didn't hold the ball up. He was one of the biggest reasons why, with him coming on up front and being so careless with the ball, that's why suddenly Almeria had more of the ball and were able to open up Atletico Madrid. I'm sure that form won't last. He had a laugh with Griezmann at the end of it. He must have known literally every time he got the ball, he gave it away. So it was a really surprising scoreline in the end. Great for Almeria, by the way, wasn't it? To get that little, and they haven't got anything from the game. They went out to a fourth-tier team in the Copa del Rey, and then they go to Atletico Madrid. They're 2-0 down after 22 minutes, and Garitano's probably thinking, oh, this is it. I'll be getting a lift home from someone else today. And they turned it around and almost nicked a point out of that game. So they're not useless, Almeria. I know they haven't won a game. They've only got 4 points. They're not useless, so it might be the first flicker of improved form and results for Almeria.
Villarreal nil, Real Sociedad 3. So the Marcelino bounce fell back down to earth, didn't it? Well beaten and early in the game as well.
It was 3 goals in 11 minutes from the 38th minute on, and it was 3-0 half time. And all aspects of the game, Villarreal were outplayed. I love what he said after the game, that he's never seen that happen to one of his teams and it will never happen again. Today, he said, today is the last day that this happens here. So he was quite forthright. He didn't just go, we controlled the game. he was fuming. And you saw his attitude. He's lucky in the fact he's newly appointed. He's got a degree of power and they are looking for a manager like him to take control. So it's going to be interesting now to see what he does in the future. No, Villarreal, they can't mess him about like Kike Setién and Pacheta. They're not going to get away with that. They've given him the power to not run the club, but run the first team. And he's going to make demands. And it's clear they need better players, younger players. They need to improve. And hopefully they do listen to the coach and we don't see that again from Villarreal. It was awful. Defending was terrible. From set pieces, a couple of goals, and they were just outplayed completely. It was a cruise for La Real.
Yeah, yeah. And they're really good, aren't they? They've got Inter Champions League. Draw will get them to win the group, but they are away and Inter are good. So it should be a cracking game.
Yeah, what they've done in Europe is excellent. And I still think they're in the best. I still think they've got a chance of top four. Now, I'm saying Girona will make it with one of the other two.
Yeah.
I think I'm saying Real Madrid win the league. I'm saying Girona get top four. Then it means that Atleti or Barca don't make it. Because I genuinely believe La Real are one of the top four teams in La Liga. So can they handle, they've handled the group stages and put up a decent return in terms of 29 points in La Liga, still in fifth position. So, I thoroughly enjoy watching Real Sociedad.
Right, Getafe game against Valencia. So, referenced, obviously, this is a game with history, isn't it? This, of spiky games, and it was a good crowd. Won by a Mayoral goal, so credit to him again. But ended up, so Gabriel Paulista got himself sent off. That was about the least surprising thing?
It's descent is the first one, and I think he's unlucky on the second yellow. I have to be honest. I think it was a foul. Do I think it was another yellow card? Bearing in mind, it was going to be down. They were going to be down to 10 men after 50 minutes. I don't think it warranted.
We never quite decided whether a second yellow has to be worse than the first yellow, whether a slightly soft. I don't think there's nothing in the law
think if there's a borderline. I think it should be. If it's a really bad one, if it's a clear yellow card,
he's got to go.
No, yeah. I've got no problem with that. But when it's, you're thinking, I think it's a foul, but where is not every foul is punished with a yellow card.
But we've never, it's not like you get a 51% yellow card and then you get the next one must be more than 50% for you to get one. It's just, so you can end up being sent off. for two unfortunate offences. Anyway, far more unfortunate was the second one. So the referee...
and the third.
Getafe kind of way blocks off a run of...
The ball was going to Hugo Duro. And the referee blocked...
Stood in his way.
He barged him. It wasn't where he... But the ball was going to him.
Yeah.
Control. Soft pass. The ball was bouncing to him. And the referee just barged into him and then let play continue. Now, I'm not sure the laws of the game there, because I know if it hits the referee, the game gets stopped. But if you... And then Getafe got possession. So then Javi Guerra, who's closest to the referee, he obviously says something. But you've got a problem if you're that precious that the referee couldn't have turned around and laughed and... He should have stopped the game, I think. I don't know if that's the law. But the right thing would have been done to stop the game, but he didn't. Getafe got the ball. Javi Guerra, I don't know, he probably like me, they're not sure of that law, particular law. You assume because if it is the ref, you stop the game. But if you block a player receiving the ball, which he clearly was going to get, then I think it should also be stopped. So Javi Guerra has clearly said something, but I think the referee is too... He could have stopped the game or he could have laughed it off. If you don't have to, if that law doesn't apply. Harry Guerra didn't look like he was in his face, effing and blinding. The game was still continuing.
Yeah.
It was open play still, but the referee just stopped the game and then and gave the Valencia player a red card. We have to look at the background of this game. Getafe, Valencia, Bordalás has got his fingerprints all over it for both clubs.
Yeah.
You know, it started when he was manager of Getafe, continued when he was manager of Valencia. There's rivalry between these two because of one reason only, Bordalás. And so he'd been delighted that the game was played in the way it was played. Getafe were miles better.
In the right spirit, yes.
Yeah, Getafe were miles better. Deserved the win. Mamadash really kept Valencia in it. It was difficult for, it was a difficult little spell for Valencia in terms of the younger players, you know, slightly treading water a little bit. But I thought that's... sending off could have been avoided. And also, I thought Domingos Duarte, that was bizarre as well. The referee had an absolute stinker with these two.
Yeah.
Domingos Duarte clearly gets fouled by Caños. A bit of a silly foul. It was a barge, wasn't it? Knocked him flying. And I don't know what happened after that. They went chest to chest, but nothing happened. The verbals continued. So Domingos Duarte, I seem to think, got sent off for something he said to an opponent who just knocked him over and then got in his face and accused him of cheating. And then Domingos Duarte got a straight red.
Yeah.
So he weren't abusing the referee. He was having a row with the opponent. There was nothing really threatened. They got pulled apart pretty quickly. And again, that was bewildering. Could have handled that better.
Need to go round, Terry. So I forgot. Jackie's other point was not to bleat too much about VAR, he says, but I was watching the Villarreal, La Real game and felt dismayed. No further action was brought against Capoue. He clearly booted Bryce on the arm. No intention to play the ball. Succeeded in sending him to the operating table. He's broken his arm, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Surely
lethal.
VAR Horrible. Has to look at that. The conclusion should be red card suspension.
I agree. It was a great point, Jackie, man. I forgot about that. It was brutal. Yeah. It was a cowardly challenge because...
He's fallen, and his arm is down, isn't it? Yeah, and he sort of goes through him. Like sometimes you go through a player's leg, but he went through his arm, didn't he? He got nowhere near the ball and broke
exactly.
his arm. Yeah.
Yep. How that wasn't a red card, I've no idea.
Mm.
So you don't get a red card for that, and you get a red card for Javi Guerra, you get a red card for Domingos Duarte did, and even a second yellow. So there's far too much to be going on. I think managers get away with murder in terms of their team's performances are poor sometimes, or there are reasons, there are genuine reasons why they've won or whatever won games. But it's easy for them to come out and blame a referee's decision.
Oh yeah, we're too indulgent.
I don't like talking about VAR and referees too much, but
yeah,
that was awful. That was a terrible challenge. It came out of frustration. They were getting a run around, and that was a really bad one.
Yeah.
And as you said, Bryce Mendes has broken his arm. Huge loss to Real Sociedad. I'm not sure if he can play it. Can he play on or?
No.
How long will he be out?
4 to 6 weeks out, I read. So, I don't, yeah. So they're going to lose him till after Christmas, I guess, now, isn't it? Mallorca won, Sevilla nil. So Kyle Larin scored a long-awaited goal for him. A win for Mallorca, and there aren't many of those at the bottom. Sevilla are down to 16th. Talk about the game, and then we'll do another bit of refereeing after that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to reference the Kyle Larin goal. He does score a goal, and Mallorca Stadium looks cool now, doesn't it? It's the proper football stadium. He ran across to the supporters. And I thought, oh no. He's not. But I did when I saw it, I thought, oh no. Anyway, Cole Laring gets the goal. It was a Mallorca were better. Not much better. Sevilla were the better team. I slightly disagree when you said about they're awful. They were pretty good in this game. They're finding it hard to score goals. They're finding it that's because they're so anxious. They're so uptight. They're not able to retain any composure in the final third of the pitch. They shoot too quickly. The crossing is inaccurate. The final pass isn't what it should be. But that's born out of frustration. And they were miles better than Mallorca in this game. I'm sure the stats tell you that as well. Attempts on goal and stuff like that. But Mallorca are 11th minute, are the last team at the moment, I'd say, that you want to go a goal down to. So it wasn't great defending where they conceded the goal. But from then on, Sevilla were the much better teams. I kind of have some sympathy for them, I have to be honest. Things are not going their way. And the goal, I think, is a bit of a scandal.
Yeah, so this is where we've got to. I said this before, the desire to come up with some kind of legal watertight definition of what a handball is, it followed VAR into the game. It's stupid. You can't have a watertight definition of handball. Surely you're better off just saying to the referee and his official, his assistants, you just decide what's a handball and we'll all either moan about it or not. Because what happened, it's a long-range shot, isn't it, from Pedraza? Mm. And it flicks off. It's not obvious what it's been disallowed for, is it? Because it deflects off his own player, deflects off En-Nesyri. And it's been given because it hit his elbow on the way through, isn't it? His own player.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
And I still haven't seen clear 100% proof that it hits the elbow. The elbow is, he's got his back to it because his teammate's going to have a shot. He's ahead of him. He's running towards goal. I imagine he's looking for a follow-up, a rebound. My first thought was, when VAR gets involved, is he offside? He wasn't. And all of a sudden, they found that there was a possibility of a handball. Mallorca didn't appeal for it. I think they might have appealed for an offside, but it was a defender playing him on clearly. So, as most goals now, teams appeal for anything in the hope that someone might find something. And in this case, that's exactly as it proved to be. I don't think there was 100% evidence that it hits Nesyri's arm. You see the slow-mos where it you think it clearly hits the back. There's another one where you think, does it hit the back and then brush his elbow? And I don't think there was enough proof on VAR, on the replays, to cancel that goal. I think it should be obvious.
Yeah.
It has to be obvious. And when I look at that, I don't think it was obvious. I'm not talking about clear and obvious error. I'm talking an obvious touch of the arm.
Yeah.
A lot of us don't agree with the law, you know, in terms of if any goal is scored, if it's the use of an arm. And I'm not even convinced this does touch the arm of Nesyri. There is one where you think, does it from distance? Then there's others on La Liga TV, they slowed it down. You can see it hitting in the back of Nesyri. And I just think, you know, we want to see goals. We need more goals in La Liga. The last thing we need is them, look, you know, VAR looking for
trying to disallow goals. Yeah.
So it was a tough one on Sevilla. Diego Alonso is increasingly coming under pressure. I think, in my opinion, the last thing they should do is change the manager again.
Yeah.
I think the players are playing for him. They're just down in the dumps. There are weird situations at Sevilla when I look, and there's always players missing now. I don't know what their best team is. There was players missing from the bench. Clearly, suspensions play their part. Injured players, you know, Sousa wasn't there, Acuna wasn't there, Navas wasn't there. There's, you know, Mariano Diaz has disappeared again. Yanazai came off the bench earlier at the weekend. Luca Bacchio gets injured. It's a tough place to be at the moment. And I think they need that stability with the manager's staying. I don't think they need to change manager again.
One of our patrons, Lucas, would like us to give a nod to Kieran Rodriguez, the Las Palmas midfielder. He says, after battling cancer and missing virtually the whole of their promotion season, he's been so crucial in La Liga, scoring another winner and getting that goal line block. He's been officially goated, which is now...
Lovely. I mean, they were fortunate to win this game, I have to be honest. Samu Arodion had two really good chances.
Talking
two
about
goals
missing
disallowed.
Chances. Hit the post as well, didn't they?
Two goals disallowed and one so close. One I give as offside. The other one, oh my goodness, it's so close. So Alaves were they were really unlucky not to get. They need to find someone to score goals. They're a decent team. And they probably should have got something from this game. Las Palmas, 8th, 24 points. I criticised them at the start of the season. I probably wasn't alone because they weren't great to watch. They're better to watch now. They're not prolific in front of goal. Scored 14 and they've only conceded 13. So there's not many games in the matches that Las Palmas play. But to get to this stage of the season in 8th place, just off of Europe, 24 points, scoring 14 goals, and Kieran Rodriguez has got a couple of really good goals amongst them. So, no, it's pleasing to watch Las Palmas in terms of possession and stuff. And now they're picking up points, picking up wins, and look like they're going to be comfortably safe.
8th in the table. So, and then one last game to discuss. Cadiz 1, Osasuna 1. Roger Marti with a brilliant header for Cadiz. And then... here we are. Another dodgy handball, Terry.
This one's a header back across goal for Osasuna. It's going 10 yards wide. And it's Momo Mbaye, who's the ball's gone over his head. He turns to react to where the cross has gone. And it brushes the fingertips. And Hoba Arasate said he didn't agree with the decision that gave his team a penalty. But it's in modern football, it's a penalty. But he didn't agree with how.
Credit to him for that as well.
It's easy, isn't it? You say, oh, yeah, it's a penalty and just leave it at that. But I think he speaks for a lot of people when he says that things VAR officiating handball.
It took ages as well, wasn't it?
Too much. I say they're taking too much of the time up.
Yeah.
Too much attention. We're all getting a bit weary of it now, aren't we? But
and it hasn't got any better.
Once we've gone there, I know exactly what would happen if it got taken away again. There will be instances where people go, oh, see, if we had VAR, it would have been given.
Yeah.
And so I think it's there to stay, but it has to be better than what we're seeing.
Yeah, although, honestly, because I do championship games and... Honestly, it's such a relief when a decision and it's gone. And 5 seconds later, you realise, oh, that's it. They've given the decision. So that's it. There is no penalty. The goal stands because the ref's pointed back to the halfway line and the liner hasn't put his flag up. And you think, ah, thankfully. Yeah. So there we are. But we're all too.
But do you think when if it went VAR, do you think anyone's ever gonna? Oh, bless him, referee, got that one wrong.
No, but I think that we all collectively need to grow up about refereeing decisions, and two,
they
need to be less sensitive to criticism, because I think that's what one of the things that's ruined VAR is that it's all they're so defensive about it. It's all set up to protect the referees rather than to provide entertainment. And so that whole thing of let's go and watch that 15 times. Because if we've missed it, we'll be criticised. Honestly, we do over-criticise referees, but they should also be less sensitive to being criticised. You get it wrong, fair enough. Everyone moans. That particular fan base moan. Fair enough. Live with it. I'm be less sensitive.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. I think that the commentary and media are too focused.
Honestly, there are times at which...
And ignore completely the rest of the game.
Precisely. Sometimes you watch a really good game and you know, and my heart sinks and I think, oh, what have you done to the production team when you think they come back and it's going to be, you're just going to be picking over the controversial decisions. And they somehow there's a climate where people in TV football production think that's what you have to do, and you don't have to do it. And after, yeah. Other than the one fan base who might be sitting, and even then, an element of one fan base that feels hard done by, but the next time it will be someone else. Yeah. And the next time it will be someone else, you know.
And it'll go in your favour.
Yeah, precisely. And so just can we not just discuss the game and the best bits of it? And then if there is an unclear thing, because you know, we've done it again today, haven't we? You know, so there is stuff to talk about. But VAR certainly isn't giving us less to talk about. Well, certainly, if there was no VAR, we wouldn't be talking about Enziri's handball. Literally, neither of us would have mentioned it.
No.
You know, there's loads like that, aren't there? That we just, that are only issues because we
or
start...
Or the penalty given to Osasuna.
Yeah, yeah.
We wouldn't be using that as... Did you say that? Blatant handball. It brushed off his fingertips and he weren't even looking.
Yeah.
No one's going to do that.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah.
We
no...
are finding...
Yeah, no one, no fans are ever going to be sitting there going through, looking for the minutiae, rock and rolling a bit of, you know, a bit of action to say, oh, did it just touch his, oh, did it flick off his elbow? It might have done. No one's going to. Anyway, there we are. There we are. We've talked about VAR again. Chunk of the podcast. Right. We'll leave it there. So obviously there's the remainder of the Granada Athletic game to come. Rest in peace, Antonio Trujillo. I'm sure they'll pay a tribute to him when the game picks up again. And then obviously Rayo versus Celta, a bit low on the goals, only 20, including the one for Athletics. But I'm sure Rafa will sort that out, won't he? With a...
Oh, God, 4-3 thriller, that would be tonight.
Yes.
It might be true, fingers crossed.
Yes. And then we'll be back for the Patreons. There's obviously a round of European action coming up as well. We'll see whether Sevilla can sneak into the Europa League and do it all again. So we'll be back for the Patreon soon. We'll be back with another round of La Liga next week. So we'll see you for that. Bye-bye.